Andrew, I chose you for a reason.
Lead these people.
Show me the best numbers this place has ever seen. Last quarter, we saw 4% growth. Double it.
You got it.
Double.
Done.
I'm not kidding.
Neither am I. It's already done.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
A bit late this week, but we're here. Ethan, Will, and Nick. No Weiss this week. He'll be back for the 49ers preview. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping first things first. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanJSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily, even though he's not here. Follow Will at 27. Follow Nick at Nick Zoraris. Follow the blog at Gotham SN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Okay. A lot to talk about. 6 quarters of the worst football I've ever seen. Probably most Giants fans I've ever seen, football fans I've ever seen. Followed by 2 of the greatest quarters I've ever witnessed as a New York football Giants fan. We could just start with the offense. It's really Jekyll and Hyde with Daniel Jones. Week 1, I think that there were a lot of valid excuses for him. This week, I think he played pretty poorly in the first half. I think the offensive line was much improved. We can talk about them as an individual unit in a moment, but since we're starting with the quarterback. And then they come out in the second half with the play calling that was may or may not done by the head coach instead of the offensive coordinator, another thing we can probably discuss. And he's just lighting it up. He's darting. He's got time. He's hitting guys in stride. It was just an unbelievable performance. And, you know, in my eyes, it's sort of like, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, we just gave this guy $40 million a year, and I still don't know. Like, which Daniel Jones is going to show up?
That's what you tweeted the other day.
Yeah, we've seen the highs. We've seen the lows. But on a week-to-week basis, it's still a mystery which guy's going to show up.
Same thing with the team. The team doesn't know either. He had 63 total yards in the first half, and then he had 317 between rushing and passing. Two polar opposite halves. You don't know what was said in the locker room, what kind of got them going, and whether or not Dable was calling plays, even if he says he wasn't. I kind of am inclined to believe he was. Arizona is not a good football team. The fact that the Giants looked that inept on offense against a team that was missing its best defensive player in Buda Baker, to go from just non-functioning, non-existent team to we're going to put up 30 points and a half, it is maddening. It's a good problem to have that they were able to find 30 points kind of out of nowhere. But at the same time, you shouldn't have to do that. It shouldn't come down to, all right, we need Daniel Jones to make all of these plays outside of structure, extend these plays and all these designed runs against Arizona, because we got to pull this out against the Cardinals. What are we going to do against the actually good teams?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where I'm at. You can't play 6 quarters of the worst football I've ever seen and then pull out that win. I mean, seriously, just out of your ass and me to be confident moving forward. Well, we'll get your thoughts in a sec, but it really is, Nick, an overall team that you don't know yet. Sort of by the end of week 2, you're hoping that you have an idea either of their identity, their skill level, and we just don't have it, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because they've been generally atrocious. A few guys have stood out, namely the rookies. I mean, Deontay Banks and Trey Hawkins, they look like they belong after 2 weeks. And that's one of the toughest positions to make a transition to in the pros is cornerback. And you'll see it constantly. Like rookie cornerbacks will come into a game filling in for an injury, quarterback's going right after them. The Giants have 2 of those guys and they look like they belong. So that's a good thing.
I have a question for both of you off of that point. Do you think the fact we don't know what this team is because how much roster turnover there was in the offseason, especially in terms of starters and trying to find roles for all these new guys? Or do you think that this is genuinely, this is who they are because they've got a group that doesn't really have a ton of star power and that it's going to have to come from different guys every week and that you really aren't ever going to know what you're going to get week to week?
I'm inclined to believe that they're still gelling because I find it just way too hard to believe that a defense with this much quote-unquote talent is this lost. I mean, you have a fifth overall defensive end. You have two highly paid interior defensive linemen. You just paid Bobby O a gazillion dollars. Jason Pinnock came out of nowhere, and he's been playing really well. Two rookie cornerbacks that have been playing well. But as a unit, it's like it's maddening. They've gotten minimal pressure in both games, and especially against the Cardinals, it was especially embarrassing. And they were unable to stop the run against the Cardinals. I mean, what are you going to do against the fucking 49ers?
You know, and you didn't mention Isaiah McKinney, and then Adoree Jackson, who's also been playing very, very well. But yeah, I think, you know, it is a mixed bag. I think, Nick, you hit the nail on the head that we are still gelling. We're still kind of finding our identity. There's a lot to kind of go through. First of all, before starting to talk about the team, I want to give Ethan credit for one of his better takes on a recent podcast. And I don't give Ethan a lot of credit. You know, Ethan has some very bad takes.
It was a surprise. Yeah.
I think Ethan's worst take of all is disrespecting the greatest TV show ever made, The Sopranos. And on that note, happy birthday, James Gandolfini, who would be celebrating 62 today. Weiss, I know you're not here, but that's for you. However, despite Ethan's TV wisdom deficiency, he was completely right about saying that no one should ever live in an apartment where one is at the mercy of Spectrum Internet. I am currently a victim of that. I've cut out once already on you, and so I apologize in advance if my internet continues to let us down, because Spectrum has been a mess for weeks. I called them today. I said, my internet's not working. They're like, oh yeah, it's not working. We should come by your office in the middle of the day tomorrow. You know. Anyway, I digress. But another hot take, actually, before I get Giants, is I think I know why Weiss isn't here. I think Weiss is hiding because he's afraid that I will yell at him for that absurd take about is Dable calling plays, starting that rumor with that one screenshot. That, of course, that's exactly, I mean, what a Twitter rumor. Somebody takes a picture, which is a coach masking his mouth, where the offensive coordinator, as he was, you know, for years in his last job, you know, for a couple years, you know, I know he only took over for Bieniemy at the end, always calling plays from the booth. And Twitter just runs with like what started with a rumor. It's like the whole disease of me that Wes Steinberg essentially started this summer. And then you have, you know, somebody takes that seriously. And actual fans really have emotional investments of like, oh yeah, you who regurgitated some rumor for a dummy account. Yeah, you're dumb. You missed it, you know, and it's terrible. No, Kafka called the plays. I mean, I know there's a, you know, lionization of people that was a little stale going into the year to begin with.
Dable was calling the plays.
What's that?
Dable was calling the plays.
Yeah, right. Okay, exactly. No, I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, he was. Will, first of all, did you watch Justin's breakdown?
I did not watch Justin's breakdown.
Then you should watch Justin's breakdown, because at no point in the Cowboys game did Brian Dable even have a play call sheet in his hand, let alone holding it over his mouth, talking into the microphone. Telltale sign that either he's radioing in the plays to Daniel Jones or he's telling Kafka which plays to call.
And I'll put it this way.
Kudos
the
to
only reason that I'm giving you
throwing Kafka under the bus.
The only reason I'm giving you any sort of, you know, I'll meet you any sort of halfway on this is because
you're wrong.
I've started as many rumors about Mike Kafka as anybody, because, you know, for the same reason we did about Patrick Graham, I do not want him to see him replacing Jonathan Gannon next year.
Sure.
I would like to see him continue to be the offensive coordinator for the Giants. So if we want to say that he has no value, he can't call plays, and he needs a head coach to step in with a McDonald's menu, I'll go with it.
Well, listen, when you've been scoreless for six quarters, something's got to give. Dable had enough, and he absolutely was calling the plays.
That was a kitchen sink moment right there, because you lose that game, you go into San Francisco without Barkley. Granted, you didn't know you weren't going to have Barkley going into the game until the end of the game, which that's something else we could probably talk about, the fact that Saquon was in to run that ball when he probably shouldn't have been, in all honesty.
Nick, have a little conviction here. Was Dable calling the plays or not? Yes or no? What do you believe?
I think he was, in all honesty. Yes, I don't – it doesn't really matter to me in all seriousness. They won the game, which is what matters. But I do think something changed because they were a bit more aggressive. Like they took
Right. This is not an indictment on Kafka. It's just sometimes you got something that happened.
And I'm not interpreting this as an indictment, you know, regardless of how it's intended. I just don't think that's true. We spoke last week in the Dallas recap about how refreshing it was that even as the Giants were getting their tails, you know, beaten down, the Giants were playing to win. They got, you know, they were on the field and they were calling plays that they were trying to say, okay, this is the play that if it works, it'll give us the best chance to win. And that's what happened this week too. Ethan was on a group text with me all game. I was saying that the Giants were going to win this game. I got a text in the first half as Wes Steinberg and Field Yates. For those of you who aren't on Twitter, Wes Steinberg is a parody Giants account who likes tweeting somewhat believable nonsense, essentially, and seeing which respected members of the media will run with it, thinking that, oh my God, you won't believe what the Giants did now. But as it was 17-0, I got a text from a friend saying, what's going, Will, you seem like a level-headed fan. What's going on? And I responded, I can't talk, busy, but we win this game. And then, you know, I figured I had to text Ethan in our group too. So I texted Ethan, we win this game. And I got a little bit of mockery in there, but it just seemed like, out of halftime, the Giants, you know, it's not like I disagree with what Nick said. It's not like the Giants put up 30 points out of nowhere. Every point the Giants scored, every play the Giants ran was a part of a script to come back and win the game. Everything was done with intention. They weren't, you know, chucking balls up, you know, hoping for, you know, for a big play or a flag or some crap like that. You know, they were, you know, operating with intention. They were moving the ball down the field. Darren Waller was getting involved. Isaiah Hodgins involved. Darius Slayton was involved.
Sure, but every team that's not coached by Joe Judge has a game plan and has an intention to win. It's not like they're going to come out of the half and throw the towel in.
No, but I mean, you see guys who are just trying to get out of there, and you see there are games where it's a 3-possession game at halftime, and you know, like the Giants Jacksonville game. What was it in 2015, maybe, where Larry Donnell had the somersaults, and I think that's a game that got JT Thomas's contract with us, just, you know, how well he played. You see games where teams who are up 3 scores will lose the game. The Cardinals didn't lose the game. They toned down their aggression on offense, and that didn't help them out. But the Cardinals, you know, didn't make any key mistakes. The Giants just executed flawlessly. And I of course agree with you. Like, how can they not do that in the first half? But it did seem like during the first half, there were some glimpses that they were getting closer and closer. And then they just put it all together in the second half, and it was incredible. But you know what my favorite part of the whole game is? Ethan does. But Nick, any idea?
It could be anything, honestly, Will. You have very peculiar takes.
When the Giants lined up to go for two after scoring from going down 28-14 to 28-20, finally the Giants got that right. And, you know, the Giants missed – I think they did do that, or they did – I think they did do it correctly, or they – I'm not sure when they played against
the Falcons. I feel like they lined up, they took a penalty, and then they kicked the one.
That's what happened. But they played a night game in Atlanta in 2018, and I think Shermer got that wrong, and it just broke my heart. For decades, this has been a no-brainer. You know, you go for two, you make it the first time. You know you don't have to go for it the second time. You miss it the first time. You have that second chance where you can basically make up for it. So you don't have to make it 50-50, which has been historically what people look at. And frankly, it's a little less than 50-50 because it's not 100% that you make the one. You really have to only make it like 37% of the time for it to be the correct call. And that 13% difference is enormous. And I feel like the announcers really shortchanged that explanation. That did apply to the Giants. Obviously, you know, converting from 7 yards out, you no longer have that, you know, 37% chance at making it. So I do agree that going for one was the correct take. But last year, there was such a narrative that Dable really was aggressive and made the right call in going for two against Tennessee. And I really reject that because I think Dable said, if I succeed, I'm forcing Tennessee to try to march down the field and play aggressive. And they did. They had a makeable field goal that could have won the game even after slowing it down and, you know, not running plays that they could have ran. Had they missed, obviously the game would have been over. So I thought that was very different. You know, you see Colorado State the other night when they tied up Colorado in the first overtime, not going for one. I mean, that's a failure of aggression, but this was just an analytically correct play. It's the Giants not saying this is the way it's always been done. The Giants saying this is the best way to do it. This is the way that wins games. And it's been too long since we've had that competitive advantage. And God, it feels really, really good.
One thing on that point, because you mentioned the play briefly. They still looked really sloppy, man. So many penalties, 9 penalties for like 80 yards. They were late subbing guys on and off defense a lot of the game. I assume, again, that's more of the gelling point that we're talking about as opposed to like they just haven't coached them well. I did think it was funny that we got that one clip of Dable yelling, damn it, Wink, on that one play where they were subbing guys off late. I feel like the defense was awful in the first half, frankly. Yeah. I mean, the way you counter a heavily aggressive blitzing team is you run the ball. You make them play the run and let up the pass rush. And the Giants just could not stop anyone. I mean, Josh Dobbs was making plays. Like, he was hitting guys downfield. He was taking shots. And if Arizona stays aggressive, they probably win that game.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, we can talk about the defense now if you want. I'm worried about Kayvon.
In terms of what, though? Like, in terms of...
And this, again, this is like a very niche thing. Kayvon, at this point in time, is on the Olivier Vernon arc, where he is a solid, real solid player who is not at this point, but I think this could be the direction he's heading, the king of almost. He hasn't really gotten pressures, but like the Olivier Vernon was like a big dude. He wasn't particularly fast. He was really strong, really sound against the run, and could get you like 6 to 8 sacks a year. And when you spend fifth overall pick on a defensive end, it's really not what you want. You want a guy who's going to be a double-digit sack, pressure on every play. Did he even have a single pressure? I mean, listen, for the amount of draft capital that it was invested in him, I mean, Evan Neal's another problem. It's not what you want. And I understand that Wink's guys, like, I don't think he's ever had more than, what, 10 sack?
He's never had a double-digit sack guy.
He's never had a double-digit sack guy. So, you know, part of it could be, like, what he's asked to do. But, like, on an individual level, like, rushing the passer is rushing the passer. Like, get there. Like, you have to. And he was getting blocked successfully by tight ends. Like, you can't have that.
Okay, I'm very excited about Kayvon. I think Kayvon is the type of person and energy of the Giants. I think we've gotten rid of the JPPs, the Snacks Harrisons, the Odells. Less going to give the polished answer, but they're going to give the authentic answer, and they're going to fire the hell out of him. Kayvon is, how old is he? 22, 23, and the Giants don't have a veteran leader that he can look up to help him channel that and maximize into being the most productive player he can be.
Kayvon is an alpha personality. Kayvon is a guy who is unpolished energy, who's going to give you that raw motion, who's going to fire up his teammates. He's what Strahan has called out as the alpha that the Giants have lacked. Kayvon is that guy. And, you know, I hear what you mean by the king of almost. I hesitate to draw conclusions this soon in a defense that still really hasn't found its identity. But I think that he's the type of personality we really need. And with more of those types of personalities, we're going to see the best of him still to come.
I mean, no one's disputing the personality aspect. I just don't care. Like, I mean, like, I loved OBJ and OBJ's personality, but with it came some of the all-time greatest production from a wide receiver when he was healthy. Like, listen, I love his style. I love the way he speaks. I love, like, I love that alpha personality, but it doesn't translate to alpha play on the field. Like, Strahan was an alpha on the field. Kayvon is just not that yet. And I'm not willing to give up on him, but I am certainly nervous early on in year two, where we haven't even seen glimpses of the production. Like, even the pressures aren't, the sacks aren't there. Like, he's good against the run, but, like, bro, you can't be being just manned up by a tight end.
No, I think, you know, it's no, we're nobody's writing him off yet, but obviously, no,
certainly when, not, but I don't
when
think
you compare him to what Parsons has done his career so far, it's not great. But I think there's a long story ahead of him, and I think that we are going to see that. Where I've always been a little bit more concerned is, frankly, Aziz. I know Aziz hasn't been healthy, and that's, you know, the best ability is availability. But even when he has been healthy, I haven't seen him like, I've never been like, okay, wow, there's Aziz on the field, he's going to make a play. And I feel like a lot of the narrative this offseason was that's going to be really what we get from Aziz. And I haven't seen it. I don't feel like, even if he's healthy, I feel like we can still upgrade over him.
Well, I mean, I certainly agree there. My take on Aziz has always been, he is a really solid number two pass rusher. And unfortunately, last year, when healthy, he had to be the number one. And that obviously, like, we're talking about a roster totally devoid of talent. But again, like you said, best ability is availability. He hasn't been available. So as far as I'm concerned, he's sort of written off in my eyes. I don't want to say it's negated by the way that Wink plays defense in such an aggressive style and that blitz heavy defense. But listen, you got an Isaiah Simmons, you got a Bobby O. Like, these are guys that you can move around and scheme to generate those pressures if you don't have a good second pass rusher.
Speaking of Isaiah Simmons, the Giants were getting cooked by the corpse of Zach Ertz. That was not a good look, how open he was in the first half. Granted, everybody was wide open for Arizona in the first half. This is the most athletic defense the Giants have had in 5-6 years, and they can't stop old man Ertz. you try and put it into the context of it's early in the season. They were really rattled. They couldn't get their legs under them. It took till halftime to get their legs under them. But God, does that make you worried about the long-term trajectory of the team for this season?
Yeah, it really does. But again, like, it's so early. And there are a lot of new faces. I mean, really, like, the only thing that has me worried is the pass rush. We all went into the season expecting growing pains for Banks and Hawkins. But really, it's the front seven. Bobby O is a new face. Isaiah Simmons, new face. I know Isaiah Simmons didn't have the best usage against the Cardinals. But, like, these are, like, vet guys that you expect, especially based on draft capital, salary, like, you expect them to be effective. And they haven't been.
The biggest culprit, I think, on defense is actually probably, in my mind, been Leonard Williams.
Oh, 100%. Invisible. As time goes on, and I think everyone on here would acknowledge, because it was talked about so frequently this offseason, going into the season with the Giants, you know, doing some cap gymnastics with Daniel Jones and Graham Gano, like, they haven't really touched the Dory. They haven't really touched Leonard Williams. Like, yeah, like Joe Shane, and I'm an Dory fan, but I think this especially pertains to Leonard Williams. He's like, I just need to get this cap hit out from under me. And I am not going to extend him. I am not going to, you know, do some gymnastics where I'm still going to have some of this on the books after this year. I'm just getting out from under it. And he can go be a free agent. I'll suffer through it this year. And I think we all agree that that's the right move.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And I think, you know, there's a philosophical question that is really difficult to answer, because I've been completely impressed with Shane. I think he handles things the right way. He's got poise. He's got dignity. I think, you know, obviously it's easy to look good after, you know, the act he followed, but I love the way he carries himself. That said, as you all know, I had a lot of reservations about the kind of run it back theme of the summer. And I know that's trivializing it a bit. Moves like extending Darius Slayton, obviously extending Daniel Jones, keeping Saquon back at a top of market cost. No complaining about extending guys like the cornerstones, like, you know, a Dexter Lawrence and an Andrew Thomas, even making some addition moves, not, you know, rebuilding moves, like, you know, adding Bobby O, obviously trading for Darren Waller. Moves like, you know, getting Paris Campbell instead of a replacement level talent. We can talk about where Paris Campbell snaps are going to be coming from at the end of the year. I'm finding those harder, fewer and farther between, especially with Jalen Hyatt emerging as one of our more dangerous weapons. But
I was going to start talking about bright spots. But listen, to not to totally counter your point, because I agree with some of the things that you're saying, a lot of these deals are short-term deals or deals that you can get out of. So it's like, listen, after last season, that goes to what you were saying about him being, you know, an intelligent guy, not too difficult to be more intelligent than his despicable predecessor, as you would say. But
yeah, we're not spending starter money on Patrick Omeme because he played three games the year before.
But again, like, you know, Saquon, especially, I mean, I don't think he's a Giant after this year. 1 year deal, fine. Like, he's your best offensive playmaker. Daniel Jones, they can get out of it after year two if things implode this season, you know, which we were really close to seeing. You know, the Caleb Williams campaign almost got started again. Yeah, a lot of these guys, like, cap hits just not going to be on the books next year or the year after that. I'm not going to say it's the right thing or the wrong thing, but after a surprisingly productive year like last year, he didn't go all in, but there were glaring holes on the roster that I don't think he would have been able to live with if he went into this year with fifth or sixth round picks or practice squad players or replacement level players such as Bobby O.
Yeah.
Paris Campbell, I was never a huge fan of that one. But yeah, I think we're pretty much all on the same page. Let's talk about Jalen Hyatt. I tweeted this earlier today. This player is basically like the prototypical do not overthink it. And every team overthought it at least twice. He has elite speed. And I think it was Brandon Brown who said it in an interview earlier this offseason. Just because a player wasn't asked to do something doesn't mean that they can't do it. And when you have a coaching staff as talented as the Giants do, for the most part, Thomas McGahee, Bobby Johnson, whatever, you can coach these guys up. It's funny because one thing I used to love to say about Ramsey Barden is you can't teach height. You can't teach speed. And Jalen Hyatt has it. It's very effortless. And there are just so few people, and you can even compare it to like animal. You look at like a horse run, or you look at a deer or a gazelle run, and you watch some of the more faster like archetypes of these animals and these people, and it looks almost effortless at top speed compared to other people or animals who look like they're emptying the tank, just giving it their absolute all. And Jalen Hyatt has that rare effortless speed where he can just blow by guys and it looks like he's just in a normal jog. It's truly impressive. I'm super excited for what he can do, for what he's going to do this season. And he needs to have at minimum 60 to 75% snap count per game, because he's the only player on this offense who has that speed, who can act as the deep threat, a true deep threat, because the Giants have a lot of guys who are successful underneath. Darren Waller is successful underneath. Saquon Barkley can be successful underneath. They've got Sterling Shepard, and when Wandale Robinson comes back, those guys can feast underneath. They need that threat on the field.
I don't totally disagree with you. I think they're going to ease him in.
Sort of disagree with me though, Nick.
They're going to ease him in slower than that because football people are a lot.
But they shouldn't. They eased him in week one. They even eased him in week two. The urgency is there for that type of player. That's the problem. If they had a less talented but equally fast player, then I could maybe understand easing him in. That's what Jalen Hyatt was drafted for, is to take the top off of defense. And you hope he develops those other skills so he can feast underneath. Maybe he can get some snaps in the slot. But right now, his job is the deep threat. And they don't have any others that are as fast as him.
I completely agree with you in that respect. We've seen the Giants really struggle with that. This was one of the worst teams in the entire league in terms of explosive plays last year. You saw the impact he had when he got in the game, that big play coming out of the half to kind of set the tone that, hey, even if we're going to lose this game, we're going to try and get the ball to good players and see who's going to make plays. And as they hit that deep shot, it opened up other things. Of course, you know, it helps having a functioning offense to be able to get those types of plays to work. But in theory, you can do a lot of interesting things with Jalen Hyatt, where you do a lot of the two tight end stuff that worked against the Cardinals with Hyatt, where you can do two tight end sets. You can run play action out of that because you're going to have two guys who can stay in the block or go out for passes. And when you play at, and when you're playing against teams that blitz aggressively, you use that play action to your advantage and you take that shot and you hit it. And hopefully they can find ways to incorporate
play action. Daniel Jones is excellent on play action.
He would have had a touchdown. That Campbell play would have been a touchdown if Jones could have stepped into that throw a little bit more and gotten a little bit more on it. He had Hyatt had to stop and come back to it. It was so far.
Jones had a couple underthrows.
The only point I want to make is I think if you look at the wide receiver room outside of Hyatt, the single most, the single attribute, and I'm obviously looking at the wide receiver room specifically, not counting Darren Waller, but the single attribute that probably defenses will have to game plan the most is speed from Darius Slayton. And I completely agree that I think Hyatt, as he develops, will be an upgrade over Darius Slayton. I think that's probably the consensus among everyone on this call. I would say that the urgency to replace Slayton snaps isn't necessarily the same. And I don't know if having both of them on the field together makes as dynamic an offense the way that we want to run it with, given the emphasis on, you know, with so many underneath guys. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do, because I think Hodgins doesn't really have another guy on the roster that really does what he does with just like the physical go and get it kind of guy. I think Wandale and then a Shepherd and Beasley are going to be fighting for those Campbell snaps. I mean, it's hard for me to see Shepherd sticking around on the roster for the year, right? As of right now, the way he was used, the need for a returner, and just the way that his skill set is shared by other receivers in the room. But
one,
yeah,
I think, because I just did touch on Daniel Jones play action. In the second half, he was 13 of 15 for 229 yards off of play action in one half. First half, he was 0 for 3. Play action's there, especially when you have the threat of Saquon, you have the threat of
Daniel. And it's crazy because, like, you know, the run game shouldn't have been very much of a threat in the second half. You know, they should have been right. Kind of.
Yeah. Like, yeah, but that's a good point.
I want to shout out one other guy. You know, we shouted out a Jalen Hyatt. I feel like last week, Ethan was a little rough on the investments or what he thought a lack thereof has been in Joe Schoen's draft.
John Michael Schmitz was excellent.
JMS was great, but I want to talk about one other guy too. At FanFest in 2022, back when FanFest was worth going to and they had an open practice, I was sitting with Weiss and then our good friends from Big Blue Banter, Dan and Nick. And we were right on the Giants sideline, really close to the field. And we saw Marcus McKeithen tear his ACL literally right in front of us. I remember looking at Weiss and we were saying, that's an ACL, that's a year. We just both really felt it because McKeithen had had a good camp. He's a guy at a position of need. And he balled out. And it was great to see.
I don't know if I would say balled out, but he played very, very well, especially considering he had to play next to Evan Neal. The offensive line as a whole played really well. Now,
we were talking about Shane not putting investments into the line. The offensive line that came out there, yeah, there was Andrew Thomas, but then there were three, the other three guys who started were Shane draft picks. And then Bet Redison got replaced by Glowinski. I mean, that's
four. Well, starters three, but finished the game four.
Sorry, who am I missing?
Izudu, Schmitz, McKeithen, and Neal.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so it's Evan Neal on top.
So pass block win rates for the Giants this past week. Izudu, 89.7. Schmitz, 100%. McKeithen, 89.7. Evan Neal, 93.1. Pretty good. Not the Cowboys or the 49ers pass rush, but listen, take what you can get. Listen, they were good. I'm really excited. I think that there's absolutely a conversation that needs to be had about Josh Izudu, because where does he fit? When Andrew Thomas comes back, he's not going to be at left tackle. I think a lot of people are going to be calling for Evan Neal to move to right guard. I'm here to say that is just not happening. They're going to let Evan Neal play out the full second year. They're going to try to coach him up. They're going to hope for improvements. You didn't invest seventh overall pick to move the guy after a year and a half. So again, it's like, what do you do with him? I don't think Izudu played too much. He might have. I mean, he definitely played some guard in college. I don't think he played as much guard as he played tackle. One idea that I was throwing around in my head that made sense for about half a second, and then I realized it was totally ridiculous, would be to move Evan Neal to left guard and have him play next to Andrew Thomas. But Evan Neal has never played left guard. I don't even think he took reps at left guard at all last year or this year in camp or practice, which, again, makes sense. You drafted him to play right tackle. So, listen, the Giants may finally have their swing tackle in Izudu, a good problem to have considering how frequently we're seeing injuries happen to offensive linemen around the league.
A sign of life from the offensive line after last week. They weren't outstanding. They still gave up three sacks to guys I'd never heard of. They still didn't have an incredible game, but coming off what they did the week prior, that's what you needed, a sign of life. Now, San Francisco is a different beast. We were talking about it with Weiss earlier. You can't really evaluate where the Giants' offensive line is at against San Francisco. That alone that's just a tall order. But at the very least, there was progress. And that's all you can hope for in the NFL, is week-over-week progress, where even if you don't win the game, you see signs of improvement somewhere, whether it's your players, your coaching, your decision-making, whatever. Just a little incremental progress. And the Giants made some progress.
JMS was excellent. Really, really liked what I saw from him. It's been 2 weeks, but dare I say the Giants have their center of the future. He was very, very good.
It seems like he's going to be a really good player. I mean, I really liked the energy he gave on Hall. It just seems like, you know, he's an adult, he's mature, and he really is a pro football player, you know, his rookie year. I think it's now four times that we've seen this year.
The gist of your point being that they had the formation with the three running backs. They broke out the high school T formation, basically, where they line up all of them in the backfield using their speed to kind of create mismatches. You mentioned Shane Vereen in there, which I always forget Shane Vereen was a Giant for a cup of coffee, and then he broke his wrist or his arm or something like that, and that was the end of Shane Vereen as a Giant. But yeah, the Giants got to be creative, especially now. You're not going to have your best playmaker in Barkley for probably 3 weeks to be safe. You're going to have to be very creative to get the ball. I'm very curious to see how they deploy Brightwell, Breida, and Eric Gray the next few weeks, because none of those guys screams bell cow.
No, but Eric Gray's got to get run. I got to say it. Like, I mean, you know what you've got in Breida. He's a vet. You know, if you want to put him in on passing downs, fine. He's a good pass catcher. He probably knows the pass protection better than Eric Gray does at this point. But, like, if Saquon's not going to be in the roster next year, you need to know, like, fairly soon whether or not Eric Gray is going to be capable of being more than just like a replacement level player. I mean, you spent a fifth round pick on him. You don't want to waste that draft capital. We see mid-round running backs come out of the woodwork every year. Listen, I know it's the 49ers. It's going to be a tough assignment, but throw him into the deep end. Spectrum is his fault, Nick. He lives in a building with Spectrum. Just move.
I mean, it was one of Ethan's better takes. It was unquestionably one of Ethan's better takes.
It's such an Upper East Side problem.
Saquon's camp this summer said that they would love the Giants to see what we are without him. I look forward to seeing, as much as they did, what the Giants are without him. And frankly, I think best case scenario, the Giants show enough competence without him that when they come back, they look at him as a compliment and some, like, as a, you know, somebody who can augment certain things, not the focus of the scheme. Because I think the more the Giants get the ball downfield to guys who really are natural pass catchers more than he would like, who would like to be one. I think that's how the offense is at its best. And that if they find a kind of foundation of success without him, he'll only make this better. But that's running him, you know, as a piece, not as the centerpiece.
Do we have anything else that we want to cover? I think we'll probably record another episode before the 49ers game. Will, I don't know if you're going to be on that. Do you want to give a prediction? I personally think the Giants win, not to give it away.
Thanks for your patience.
Fuck Spectrum. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYGDLE. Follow Nick at Nick Zoraris. Follow Will at 27. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. That's it. I'm not doing the full housekeeping. We'll be back.
And to anyone in the audience in the same tribe as Ethan and me, Happy New Year. It's a new time to be a Giants fan. The second half. It's the year of the second half.
It is. Shana Tova to the Jews out there.